Okay, Paula.
We live the same life.
Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking Italian. Hang on. Paula. Paula Poundstone. There we go. That's your real name, right?
Tis, yes.
Yeah.
I hate it, by the way, but it is.
What, you hate your name. Why would you hate your name? It's a great name.
I hate saying my name. Hate it. I always have since I was a little kid. I don't like the name Paula, for one thing, and my apologies to Prentice. Her I love. My name I don't like. Poundstone is just plain stupid. It's not. I didn't come up with it. It was, you know, it's my father's name.
Yeah, right.
I believe, and who knows what to believe in the whole world anymore, but what I believe is that when my father's ancestors came off the boat from Germany 1,000 years ago or whatever it was, that they... it was Funenstein, I believe, and they translated it to Poundstone because it's so much prettier.
Although the other name would have been a good name for a comedian as well, I'm sure.
Funenstein.
Yeah.
Funenstein rocks the house. Yeah, either way. When I adopted my oldest daughter, when she came to me, she was already 4 and a half. I knew her since she was a baby, but she was 4 and a half when I first fostered her. And I remember having the talk with her that I was going to adopt her. And that because I wanted her to take my last name so that we would sound like a family. And then I realized I was giving her Poundstone. It was just what a horrible thing to do to anybody. Poundstone. She doesn't ever seem to have minded. I don't think their name got made fun of the way mine did when I was a kid, you know.
Well, you are returning to Toledo. I should put it out there. You're going to be at the Stranahan Theater on Friday evening, March 15th at 8 o'clock in the evening. Tickets for folks who want to attend the show, you can get them at etix.com. The phone number is 419-381-8851. Last time you were here, I think it was just over 3 years ago, yeah, in 2015. Yeah, I was at the show. I remember it was at the a different venue, slightly smaller, so they've upped you a little bit this time.
Good, I love that.
Yeah, to a larger auditorium. I guess one of the first things to ask is, you know, how have things changed for you over the last 3 years? Been a lot of stuff going on, yeah?
There's a lot of stuff going on. Well, you know, my act is largely autobiographical, and so I... you know, I talk about what I'm focused on.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's impossible not to bring up politics because, you know, we're dripping in something like politics. I don't even know what's politics anymore. It's something macabre and weird, and it's important that we huddle together to fend it off. It's important that we be together and laugh so that we can go back out into the world and, you know, not be pulled under by it. So I do talk a little bit about that. I talk about my really mental health problem with MSNBC that I just cannot stop watching sometimes. And by the way, if someone listening happens to be a Fox viewer, you have the exact same problem because it's a very similar type of programming, which is, you know, we're going to tell you what you want to hear any minute now, just stay with us. Oh. And I do, and they don't. So it's very, it's not good socially. What else? My favorite part of any show is just talking to the audience. I do the time-honored, where are you from, what do you do for a living? And in this way, little biographies of audience members emerge, and I use that from which to set my sails.
Yeah.
And so even if you saw me on, you know, Thursday night and then Friday night, it would not be the same show.
Do you have in mind how you're going to get things started, or you just kind of walk out there cold and take a look at the audience and go from there?
A little bit of both, I guess. I mean, sometimes I try to discipline myself enough to have an idea of what I'll say first. But I don't always have that discipline.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, honestly, my favorite thing in the entire world is just when in some theaters, you know, like the person who's, I don't know, chairman of the board or the person who runs the theater or whatever, will go out to make some announcements, and they'll thank the sponsors and the donors and the this and that. Mm-hmm. And my favorite thing in the world is to just try to remember one of the sponsors they mentioned and start with that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't happen every show. It happens lots of shows. And it's just... I think the audience is waiting, like, she's going to start soon. When is she going to start? And the truth is, you know, before, it's like somebody who, it's like a nurse who gives a really good injection. You know, before they know it, we're well into it.
Yeah. I read
that
somewhere.
That's the it. There is no, you know, that's it.
Yeah. I read somewhere, and I can't remember where I read this, you talking about, you know, fixating on audience members' stories and their life stories. And there was a woman that you talked to who had a job that had something to do with cheese. She was like a cheese quality control expert or something like that. Does that ring a bell for you?
It does. It was like she checked cheese slices.
For years.
Yes, it had been. Yes, she was in... she was in the front row in Bayfield, Wisconsin. I do remember.
Yeah.
Cheese checker. And, oh my gosh, I had a good time talking to her. Yeah. So that's my favorite part of the night. And I mean, I have material. I swear I do. I have, in the spring, I will have been at this job for 40 years.
Wow.
And, so, somewhere rattling around in my head is 40 years of material. And sometimes when I'm talking to an audience member, something they say triggers, you know, me to remember one of those pieces of material.
Yeah.
Other times, you know, we have a conversation wherein no part of it will ever be repeated. But, again, even the material that I have, it's all just about me and what I'm thinking and what I'm doing. It sounds incredibly selfish. For right now, for example, I am taking I take Taekwondo and self-defense, which I started doing as a chapter in a book I wrote called The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness.
Yeah.
And that was years ago that I originally did this experiment with happiness of getting fit, and then when I finished that chapter, I moved on to another topic entirely. And then just a little while ago, I went back to this guy, and I have to say, apparently, I'm very susceptible to any kind of chicanery because I am totally hooked now by the belt thing. You know how. You know, like if your kid takes martial arts or if you take martial arts of any sort, you know, you get a belt, right?
Yeah.
The yellow belt. Well, they've really worked it out. So it's just a money machine for the people who, like, because I think they make up belts. Like, I'm not very good at it at all is what I'm saying. And yet I've gotten a bunch of belts because I think they make up the belts.
Yeah.
So that you'll keep going,
like the fuchsia belt and the.
I just got a peppermint belt. Could that be a thing?
I got a
My Little Pony belt. I'm almost sure that's not authentic.
Yeah. Well, if the price is right, I'm sure that it's authentic to them at least. Yeah. I wonder if you talk a little bit about Wait, Don't Tell Me. We are the NPR station here, you know, so we got a lot of listeners who hear you on that show. Last time I talked to you, you told me a little bit about how you first got involved. Would you go back and just give us that story again?
Yeah. I mean, I always feel bad saying it, but I had never heard of the show. And then they called me up. This was a little bit over 17 years ago. They sent me an audio cassette tape of the show, which tells you how long ago it was, and I put it on the island in my kitchen, which when I looked at that house, I don't own a house anymore, but I did back then. When I looked at that house, you know, it was a big thing in the middle of the kitchen. They call it an island, and I remember I said to the realtor, I said, you know, can we get that thing out of the middle of the kitchen? And she said, oh, no, that's your island. You're going to love your island. And it's true. My kids and I used to vacation there every summer for the longest time. What happened with the island is exactly what I thought would happen with the island, which is junk piled up on the island.
Oh, yeah.
So one day, this cassette tape from Wait, Don't Tell Me had made it to the island. I still hadn't listened to it. And I had a nanny at the time who saw it, and he said, oh, I love that show. You have to do that show. So I did that show because my nanny, 17 years ago, told me to.
Yeah.
And that nanny is now my manager.
Good deal. Yeah. That's, and the rest is history, as they say.
Yeah.
There are a lot of things I could ask you about. Wait, don't tell me. But I love the quote from Peter Sagal. Says that you are the funniest human being that he has ever known, which is saying a lot, because he knows a lot of funny human beings.
Yeah, he does. I'll tell you a thing about Peter is, he obviously was already in that role when I arrived at the show. And although he wasn't always, he started out as a panelist. They had a different host entirely. And I don't know how many years ago, 19 years ago maybe, because the show just celebrated its 20th anniversary, they tried him out as the host, and the rest really is history. But they were always wrestling with what to do. I think in the beginning they were just hoping that Peter would never need a vacation. And then somewhere along the way it began to crack. So they were trying to figure out what to do when Peter needed a vacation. And so they've tried a few different things. And at one point, they were going to let Peter Gross, who's one of the panelists, stand in for Peter. And so in order to sort of audition Peter Gross, they, after the taping of a regular Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me show, they asked the audience to stick around for a few more minutes, and we did a little mini show that was not for air, but for Peter Gross to audition for the role of host. And Peter did a fine job, but afterwards he came over to the panelists and he looked at us like almost with tears in his eyes. And he was like, oh, you guys, thank you so much. That was so hard. My point being that I think Peter Sagal makes it look very easy, but in fact, it's not easy at all. And I think probably having me there makes it even harder for him.
Let me ask you this, out of curiosity, and I know that it's, just off the top of your head, but you've had a lot of guests on that show, a lot of people who are not comedians, who are funny. And who would you say, off the top of your head, was among the funniest people that would surprise you that they were funny that have been on that show?
Shoot, I wish, this is terrible because I'm not going to remember the person's name. They were some sort of, it was a French woman. Maybe you'll know because, you're an NPR nerd.
Right.
And she was some sort of financial, bigwig named some letters that are like a big international.
International Monetary Fund. No,
it
something
might have
like
been.
That.
Yeah.
IMF.
Is there a French woman in charge of it?
It sounds vaguely familiar to me, but,
I should have asked her if I could get a loan right that night, but I didn't. All right, it doesn't do you any good because I can't remember the name, but this lady was so surprisingly funny, because, what's funny about that? I'll tell you that when Barack Obama, when he was on the show, before he even began running for president, he was still senator of Illinois, and he was in town one day in Chicago, maybe for a few days, and he agreed to come do Wait, Don't Tell Me, and usually the Not My Job guest is over the phone, but because Barack Obama was in Chicago that day, he came down, and we were all just agog. We were stunned. He was so funny and so charming and so nice, and we all looked at one another and said, he's going to be president. And he had not begun to run. I remember Peter asking him if he would announce on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So I think the idea that he might run was already in the air, but he had not yet declared. They're always really great. I always look forward to hearing who's going to be the Not My Job guest because, 99.9% of the time I'm fascinated by the person in that role. We had a Supreme Court justice once.
Really?
Justice Stephen Breyer.
Hmm.
And he was charming. I interrupt a lot. It, just in life in general, I don't do it on purpose. I just can't help myself. But in that case, I remember consciously thinking when Peter began to interview him, I thought, when am I ever going to have a chance to talk to a Supreme Court justice again? And keep in mind, it is what I did my sixth grade specialty report on, And so so I just blurted out, you know, a question to him. I asked him if they give you a robe when you, you know, when you get the job of Supreme Court Justice.
Yeah.
And do you know they don't?
Really?
You have to bring your own robe to the Supreme Court. It just seemed weird to, I mean, if you made the Little League team, they'd give you a uniform, for heaven's sake.
Right.
And I think it might be a good way to start out if they all had the exact same robe. We could have avoided the Ruth Bader Ginsburg doily incident.
There it is. There you go. Well, I did not know that. See, we're learning all kinds of interesting facts.
Hadn't that been pressing on you?
Yeah.
It's not the kind of stuff, I mean, I love NPR, don't get me wrong, but it's not the kind of stuff that the investigative journalists at NPR are going to ask.
Looking at my handy phone here, was it Christine Lagarde, the person you're thinking of? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, she
just
did.
Just like my manager Googling while you're on the phone with me. That's exactly what it was, and she was really funny. And we were all kind of, you know, blown away by, you know, if you'd been interviewing, I don't know, Kristen Wiig, then you'd sort of expect her to be funny. But Christine Lagarde, I did not expect that.
Yeah.
And what is her job? Where was I right? Was it the IMF?
Yeah, IMF.
Look at that. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I probably won't remember another thing today. That was my whole, I shot everything I had of my memory power right there on that one question.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you did it here on FM 91. We appreciate
it. Niche.
Yeah. Paula Poundstone appearing Friday, March 15th, 8 o'clock p.m. at the Stranahan Theater. Get your tickets from etix.com. Also, call them up, 419-381-8851. Paula, thank you so much for talking with me today, and we look forward to having you back right here in Toledo.
It was fun. Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to going to Toledo. I know March is the right time of year.